Okay, let's unpack this. You sent us a stack of sources diving into two pretty fundamental concepts in economics, consumer surplus and producer surplus.
That's right.
So our mission today is really to take the material you provided us, dig in, and figure out what the key insights are. What do these things really mean?
Yeah, why do they matter?
And maybe most importantly, what do your sources say makes them change? And, you know, why should we care about that change?
Exactly. And they're not just like abstract textbook ideas, are they? As your sources really highlight, understanding these is pretty essential because they're core measures of economic welfare.
Welfare, right.
They show us the benefits, the actual gains flowing to buyers and sellers when a transaction happens.
Okay.
And analyzing them helps us look at market efficiency and, crucially, evaluate the, well, the real-world impact of different policies.
So we're using your sources as the map here.
That's the plan.
Okay, so let's start with the transaction itself then. Every time a buyer and seller agree on a price, there's value created. Your sources point out this value isn't just, you know, the thing being bought.
Right, it's more than that.
It's the extra benefit people get, beyond just swapping money for goods. So, first up, the buyer's side consumer surplus. What's the core idea there from the material you sent?
So, the sources frame it pretty clearly as the difference between what a consumer would have been willing to pay for something.
Yeah.
Their maximum price, really.
Okay, their personal limit.
Exactly. And what they actually did pay in the market, it captures that feeling, you know, of getting a good deal. Where your own value for it is higher than what you had to shell out. It's that extra utility, that satisfaction.
And the example in your source is helpful. If you were ready, say, to pay up to $50 for something, maybe those perfect shoes you found.
Yeah, you needed those shoes.
But the market price was only $30. You walk away feeling pretty good because you've got $20 of consumer surplus on that purchase.
That's it. That $20 represents the value you got above and beyond the price you paid.
Okay.
And graphically, your sources probably show this. It's that area under the demand curve.
Which shows the willingness to pay.
Right, for each unit, down to the actual market price line.
Okay.
And it covers all the units that get bought at that price. Its significance, as the material notes, is it's a direct measure of consumer well-being.
And useful for policy analysis.
Definitely. Vital for seeing how market changes or policies actually hit consumers.
Okay, so flipping the coin, let's look at the seller side. Producer surplus. How do your sources define that benefit?
So for producers, it's kind of similar, but from their perspective, it's the difference between the price they receive for selling a good.
The market price gain.
Yeah, the market price they get. And the minimum price they would have accepted to produce and sell that specific unit.
Their bottom line for that item.
Exactly. Which is often tied pretty closely to their marginal cost of making it.
Right. So they're getting more than it cost them at the margin to bring that last unit to market.
Precisely.
Your sources give a simple example, too. If a producer was willing to sell a unit for, say, $5, just enough to cover costs and effort.
Their reservation price, essentially.
But the market price is actually $10, they gain $5 of producer surplus on that unit.
That's the gain per unit, yeah. And similar to the consumer side, graphically, you're looking at the area above the supply curve this time.
The supply curve showing that minimum acceptable price.
Right, or cost. For each unit they might produce, up to the market price line for all the units they end up selling.
Okay.
And your material probably emphasizes its role not just as a measure of, you know, producer welfare or profit.
But also as an incentive.
Yes, a fundamental incentive for firms to actually produce and sell stuff.
Yeah.
It links directly to their profitability and, well, their business decisions.
Okay, so we've got the core ideas. Consumer surplus for buyers, producer surplus for sellers, defined by your sources. But you mentioned these aren't static, right? They change.
Oh, it's...
What dynamics described in your material cause these benefits to, you know, grow or shrink?
They're constantly in flux. Market forces, external factors. One of the most straightforward things your sources mentioned is just a change in the market price itself.
That seems intuitive. Price goes down.
Consumers pay less than they might have been willing to, so their surplus generally goes up.
But producers get less.
Producers receive less, yeah. Which can squeeze their surplus. And the reverse, if the price goes up, good for producers, maybe not so much for consumers.
Right.
But beyond just the price level, your sources also point to shifts in the entire demand or supply curves as really big drivers of change.
Okay, like if demand increases, say a product suddenly gets super popular.
Yeah, good example. An increase in demand shifts that whole curve to the right.
Okay.
And as your sources explain, that typically leads to a higher equilibrium price and a higher quantity traded.
So good for producers.
Generally, yes. They're selling more units, often at a higher price. That usually means a significant boost to their producer surplus.
And consumers.
It's a bit more mixed. The higher price isn't great. Some might even be priced out. But more is available. So for those still buying, they benefit from access. The overall impact on consumer surplus, well, depends on the specifics, the shape of the curves.
And what about an increase in supply? Maybe like new technology make production cheaper or more companies jump into the market.
Right. An increase in supply shifts the supply curve rightwards.
Lower prices, more stuff.
Usually, yes. The material you shared likely notes this generally results in a lower market price and a higher quantity sold.
Which sounds great for consumers.
Almost always is. Consumer surplus tends to increase, sometimes dramatically, because they pay less and get more.
And for producers, lower price sounds bad, but they're selling more.
Exactly. The surplus per unit might drop because of the lower price. But if they're selling a lot more quantity, perhaps with lower costs driving the supply shift.
Like with that new tech.
Yeah. Then their total producer surplus could still be substantial, maybe even larger than before. Your sources probably detail those possibilities.
Okay, now this is where the role of external factors and policies described in your sources gets really interesting. Taxes, for example.
Ah, yes. Taxes. Your sources are likely quite clear here. A tax essentially drives a wedge between the price consumers pay and the price producers actually receive.
So they're not seeing the same price anymore.
Nope. And this usually reduces the quantity traded compared to a no-tax situation.
Which means less surplus overall.
It reduces both consumer surplus and producer surplus. And critically, taxes introduce something the material calls deadweight loss.
Right, deadweight loss. Your source defines this as a loss of total surplus, right? Value that just vanishes.
That's a good way to put it. It's highlighted because it represents transactions that would have happened otherwise.
Where the buyer's value is higher than the seller's cost.
Exactly.
Yep.
Mutually beneficial trades that don't happen because of the tax. Source material uses it to show the inefficiency cost of the tax. Surplus that isn't captured by consumers isn't captured by producers.
And isn't even captured by the government as revenue. It's just lost.
Precisely. Lost economic value.
Okay. And subsidies. They're kind of the opposite in terms of surplus effects.
Broadly, yes. A subsidy effectively lowers the price for consumers and raises the price received by producers.
Encouraging more trade.
It does. It increases the quantity traded and then increases both consumer surplus and producer surplus.
Sounds like a win-win.
Well, for the market participants, yes. But as your sources probably point out, there's a cost. The government has to pay for that subsidy.
Ah, right. It's taxpayer money.
And usually the cost to the government is actually greater than the combined gain in consumer and producer surplus. So there's still an efficiency consideration, just a different kind.
Okay. And price controls. Like a price ceiling set below the market equilibrium. Rent control is a common example.
Right. A price ceiling, according to your sources, is usually intended to help consumers by keeping prices down.
So consumers win.
Well, the ones who can actually buy the good at that artificially low price, yes, their individual surplus goes up compared to the equilibrium, but
there's always a but.
The lower price discourages supply. Producers offer less. So producer surplus definitely shrinks, and you often end up with shortages.
Right. Not enough to go around.
Exactly. So many consumers who wanted the product, even at the controlled price, simply can't find it. Their surplus is zero. So the overall effect on total consumer surplus isn't a simple increase. It's complicated. Gain for some, complete loss for others who can't buy at all.
Okay, and the other side. A price floor set above the equilibrium, minimum wage, sometimes discussed this way, or agricultural price supports.
A price floor aims to help producers by guaranteeing a minimum price.
So producer surplus goes up.
For the producers who do sell their goods, yes, they get a higher price per unit, boosting their surplus on those sales.
But higher price means fewer buyers.
You got it. No. Higher price reduces the quantity demanded. So consumer surplus shrinks. And you often end up with market surpluses, unsold goods piling up.
Like unsold crops.
Exactly. So the sources likely emphasize that while some producers gain per unit, they sell fewer units overall, and the market just isn't clearing efficiently. There's waste.
Okay, so we've talked about what makes these surpluses change prices, demand shifts, supply shifts, policies, but how much they change, and maybe who feels the effects more intensely. That seems to really depend on a concept your sources spent a lot of time on. elasticity.
Oh, absolutely critical. Elasticity, both price elasticity of demand and price elasticity of supply, is perhaps the most crucial factor.
It determines the size of the changes.
The magnitude of the surplus changes, yes. And also how the burden, say, of a tax or the benefit of a subsidy actually gets distributed between buyers and sellers.
Okay, let's break that down. Consumer surplus and demand elasticity. If demand is very elastic, meaning consumers are super responsive to price changes. What does your source say happens to consumer surplus when prices move?
Right. Elastic demand means if the price goes up even a little, the quantity demanded dropped by a lot, percentage-wise.
People switch easily. Lots of substitutes, maybe.
Exactly. Or it's just not essential. So, as your sources explain, if the price rises, consumer surplus shrinks dramatically. Why? Because so many buyers just leave the market or cut back significantly.
And if the price falls?
Then consumer surplus can explode upwards. Lots of new buyers jump in or existing buyers purchase much more. Big response.
Okay. And if demand is inelastic, like for, I don't know, essential medicine or gasoline maybe?
Inelastic demand means quantity demanded changes only a little when the price changes. Consumers are less sensitive.
Fewer options, or it's a necessity.
Right. So your sources would point out that if the price increases, consumer surplus still goes down, but only moderately.
Because people still have to buy it.
Pretty much. Most consumers continue buying. They just have to pay more for roughly the same amount. They kind of just bear the price increase more directly rather than cutting back consumption drastically.
Got it. Okay. Parallel question for producer surplus. How does supply elasticity play in?
Similar logic. Elastic supply means producers can easily change their output levels, ramp up production quickly if prices rise, or cut back if they fall.
Okay.
So if prices rise and supply is elastic, producers can increase their output significantly to take advantage. Your sources would show this leads to a large increase in producer surplus.
Driven by both the higher price and selling way more stuff.
Exactly. Both factors contribute significantly.
And if supply is inelastic, maybe it takes a long time to build a new factory, or land is limited for farming.
Right. Inelastic supply means producers can't change their output much in the short term, even if prices shoot up.
So if the price rises,
producer surplus still increases, but the gain comes primarily from just receiving that higher price on the limited quantity they can supply. It's more about the price boost per unit than selling a lot more units.
Okay, that distinction makes sense.
And this brings us to a really key insight your sources likely emphasize. It's the relative elasticity of demand compared to supply that determines how the impact of things like taxes or subsidies gets shared.
Shared? You mean who bears the burden?
Precisely. Who ends up paying more of the tax or who gets more of the subsidy benefit? It's about tax incidence.
Okay, so give me an example. What if demand is inelastic, but supply is elastic? Consumers need the good, but producers can easily adjust.
Okay, in that case, consumers are kind of stuck, right? They can't easily reduce consumption if the price goes up due to a tax.
Yeah.
But producers, with their elastic supply, can more easily shift resources elsewhere or adjust output if the price they receive falls too much.
So consumers pay most of the tax.
Consumers end up bearing a larger portion of the tax burden. Exactly. The price they pay likely goes up by almost the full amount of the tax compared to the original price. Producers absorb less of it.
And flip it around. Demand is elastic, consumers are sensitive, but supply is inelastic, producers are kind of stuck.
Then if a tax is imposed, consumers can easily switch to alternatives if the price tries to go up much.
They're out of there.
Right. But the producers, with inelastic supply, can't easily cut back production or shift resources. They're less responsive.
So they end up eating the cost.
They end up bearing a larger share of the tax burden. The net price they receive, after the tax is paid, falls significantly below the original price.
Yep.
Because they just can't pass much of that tax onto those price-sensitive consumers.
Wow, okay. So elasticity is really the key to understanding who feels the impact.
That's absolutely central.
So let's pull this all together then. What does this mean for you, the learner who sent us these sources for this deep dive? Understanding consumer surplus, producer surplus, how market forces and policies shift them around, and especially how elasticity shapes those impacts. It seems incredibly powerful.
It absolutely is. It really moves you beyond just noticing, oh, the price went up or quantity change. Mm-hmm. You start to understand the welfare implications.
Yeah.
Who is actually better off? Who is worse off? How much?
Right.
It's fundamental if you want to evaluate market efficiency.
Because competitive markets tend to maximize the total.
Generally, yes. They tend to maximize that sum of consumer and producer surplus, what economists call total surplus or social surplus. Deviations often signal some kind of inefficiency, like that deadweight loss from taxes.
And it gives you, the listener, a real framework for analyzing policies you hear about every day.
Totally. You can look at a proposed tax, or a subsidy, or a price control, and predict not just that it will change things, but how it's likely to affect the actual benefits flowing to buyers and sellers.
And crucially, who will likely feel that impact more based on what you know or can estimate about the elasticities involved?
Exactly. It also just sharpens your understanding of market behavior itself. Why do firms react differently to price signals? Why do consumers respond differently to price changes for, say, salt versus a new smartphone? Elasticity is often the answer.
Okay, so we've defined consumer and producer surplus using your sources as a guide. We've explored the big factors that make them change price shifts, demand and supply curve movements, and those major government interventions like taxes, subsidies, price controls. And we really drilled down into how elasticity is the crucial factor determining the size of those changes and who ultimately bears the burden or reaps the rewards.
Which leads to, I think, an important question for you to maybe chew on after this.
Okay.
Given how critically elasticity shapes who wins and who loses from market interventions, how might understanding the specific elasticity in certain markets, think about healthcare, maybe, or education or energy, things often talked about for policy changes.
Yeah.
How might that change your perspective on the stated goals versus the likely actual outcomes of policies aimed at those areas, especially if demand is, say, really inelastic?
That's a really good thought to leave with, thinking about the real-world stickiness versus the policy goals.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing your sources with us and for joining us for this deep dive into the benefits markets create and how they get distributed.